Well, good morning. It's great to see you. Happy New Year. Thanks so much. Excited to spend the start of the year with you. If you like a Bible, raise your hand. We're going to be in Psalm number 90, Psalm 90, which is on page 413. It will also be on the screens here in a moment, so you can follow along. Also, there are sermon notes pages that will help you. If you'd like one, just ask Koa here or Bruce. Someone can help you with that. And we'll jump into this. It's good to be here with you together. Some of you are 9 o'clock people, some of you are 11 o'clock people, and this morning we're all 10 o'clock people, and that's kind of good. It's kind of good to be together. Yeah, it's good. Is there anything better than a fresh start? I mean, there's this culture-wide, collective, hopeful kind of anticipation all wrapped around this shared idea that one calendar ends today and another begins. There's this hopeful time. I'm not sure there's a more hopeful time collectively in our culture than on New Year's Day. When the content that is being published and shared is all about sort of new ideas and new opportunities and becoming a better person and setting these goals and what do you hope to become this year and what you could be healthier, you know, you could change your life. I mean, there's just this general, wonderful sort of uplifting. Even pessimists can be optimists on New Year's Day, don't you think? I really enjoy this time of year. I'm energized by the invitation to consider big plans and strategies and who I want to become and the kinds of things I want to focus on. I deeply appreciate the opportunity to say, what can we change and what should be improved and what do we want to focus our energies on? And I love that big picture kind of thinking. I'm here for it. I mean, I enjoy it and I'm all about it. And I kind of find it interesting that just a couple weeks ago, there was this sort of this, you know, culture-wide exhaustion. And we all just sort of bemoaned our way towards the end of the year and sort of puttered into the garage like we were on fumes. And, oh my gosh, the world's ending. And it's just everything's, we're just exhausted like we are at the end of so many long seasons. And then somewhat surprisingly, there's this new surge of innocence. There's this new surge of anticipation. And this sort of, I think things can get better, and everybody kind of gets on board. It's really fun to see. It seems to fuel all kinds of great intentions and really good plans. Like, for instance, the most popular month to join a gym is January, right? And so I love that. Many good starts will be attempted, and some will end well and some won't. For instance, the most popular month to cancel a gym membership is March. This is about as long as it lasts for a lot of us, right? But it's not March. It's not March. It is not yet Lent, right? It's January 1st, brand new year, and we've got this whole year before us. Let's think about this morning. There's this whole year before us. 365 brand new days. Nobody's ever lived them before. They're just full of potential. It's like waiting to be lived. It feels like unlimited potential, just unlimited. So today we're going to look briefly at Psalm 90, and Psalm 90 is a meditation on the limits of the human condition. Like some other psalms, Psalm 90 dances back and forth between God's perspective and our perspective. God's perspective and our perspective. And specifically, Psalm 90 talks about God's perspective and our perspective on time. But in addition to some poetic and memorable observations about human limits, Psalm 90 also includes several specific prayers. So that's what we're going to do together for the next several minutes. We're going to look at the way God views time, the way we experience and understand time, and then we'll focus on three specific requests or prayers, which I find very grounding and very hopeful. And I want to invite you to begin the year, invite us together to begin the year by praying these three prayers. Let me hit the pause on that for a second and just introduce the series. We're starting today four teachings on the book of Psalms, and the larger goal is to work to restore our shared practice of prayer. That's the bigger picture. we want to renew and restore and invest in as we begin the year in our practice of prayer. The Psalms are the prayer book of the Jews and Christians. And one of the reasons the Psalms continue to resonate with people all over the world and have throughout time is because they're just so honest. They're just so honest. People say things in the Psalms, you're like, is that even allowed? Right? It's like Psalms break the rules. And so we see every human emotion reflected in the Psalms. And we see how to have that honest emotion, or how to have that emotion honestly in the presence of God. So super instructive if you're looking for a spirituality that makes sense in real life, a genuine, authentic spirituality. The Psalms show us how to do it. And so we're going to explore this wonderful and I think very challenging reality in our January sermon series that we're calling, Yes, You Can Pray That. So that starts today. And in addition, we're starting a new community practice, which I hope will become very valuable and helpful. And I actually hope it will become a lasting part of what we do as we continue to share life and discover Jesus together. And that is, we're going to read and pray, as Melissa just did, a psalm together every day. And you'll be invited to join in, knowing that others in your church community are not just reading the Bible and praying, but we're reading this prayer, and we're praying this prayer today. So we'll begin on January 1st today with Psalm number 1. Tomorrow is January 2nd. We'll read Psalm number 2, and so on. And there are two tools that we've created to sort of support this practice. One is a series of short recordings, which are on the reading and then are a short reflection on each prayer. And we're releasing these 30 recordings as the next season of our podcast called Emmaus Footnotes. So the first one drops today. It's about 10 minutes long. Most of them are 6 or 7 minutes long, one a day for 30 days. I hope that'll be helpful to you. And then the second is a real simple website, adailypsalm.com/Emmaus. And this is in your sermon notes. And this is just a page that will keep us on track. It takes us just to the psalm of the day and then 6 translations of that psalm, so you can just choose which one you'd like to read. And it will become especially helpful, I think, in February when the dates and the numbers of psalms no longer sync up like they will for the next 30 days. So I recommend that to you, adailypsalm.com/Emmaus, and we can use that to read and to pray the same psalm as the rest of the folks in our church for a bit. Let's read Psalm 90 together. Lord, you have been our dwelling place throughout all generations. Before the mountains were born, or you brought forth the whole world, from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. You turn people back to dust, saying, "Return to dust, you mortals." 1,000 years in your sight are like a day that has just gone by, or like a watch in the night. Yet you sweep people away in the sleep of death. They are like the new grass of the morning. In the morning it springs up new, but by evening it's dry and withered. We are consumed by your anger, terrified by your indignation. We have set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your presence, or you have set our iniquities. All our days pass away under your wrath. We finish our years with a moan. Our days may come to 70 years or 80 if our strength endures, but the best of them are but trouble and sorrow, for they quickly pass and we fly away. If only we knew the power of your anger, your wrath is as great as the fear that is your due. Teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Relent, Lord, how long will it be? Have compassion on your servants. Satisfy us in the morning with your unfailing love, that we may sing for joy and be glad all our days. Make us glad for as many days as you have afflicted us, for as many years as we have seen trouble. May your deeds be shown to your servants, your splendor to their children. May the favor of the Lord our God rest on us. Establish the work of our hands for us. Yes, establish the work of our hands. Psalm 90 is the first book of the first psalm of the first book. Oh my goodness. It is the first psalm of the fourth book of Psalms, Psalm 90. The Psalms are written most famously by King David, and so it's easy to assume that David wrote all the Psalms, but there's others that write Psalms as well, including Moses. Moses apparently writes this Psalm, and that's interesting because it's unique and because of the way Moses is identified at the start of this Psalm. Moses, in case you don't know, a Hebrew baby boy born in Egypt when the Hebrews were the slaves in Egypt and they were growing so rapidly that the Pharaoh commands that all Hebrew baby boys be killed upon birth. In an effort to save Moses, his mother hides him in a basket and sends him down a river. The basket is discovered by the daughter of Pharaoh, the king, who remarkably rescues him and raises him in the palace as a prince of Egypt. Then he grows up and becomes this instrument of salvation for the Hebrew slaves. He leads them to freedom out of Egypt. He is the voice piece of God then, moving forward. He delivers the Ten Commandments. He speaks face to face with God. He continues to provide leadership and is the lawgiver. That's how he's called. Easily, he is one of the most important major figures in the whole Old Testament. And yet, the inscription at the beginning of Psalm 90 is just super simple. It's a drum roll by the Harley Davidson Club meeting today. Here's how the psalm starts. A psalm of David, the man of God. Isn't that, my goodness, God, help me preach today. A psalm of Moses, the man of God. Not Moses, the liberator of the Hebrews. Not Moses, the lawgiver. But just Moses, the man of God. And I just love this. And then I also love it because it summarizes, I think, the whole psalm, which is this. When we see our life and our time, the way God sees our life and our time, then we get clarity on our life and our time. Who wrote the psalm? Moses did. Who's Moses? It's the man of God, right? Just so clear. The psalm starts with two sentences about time as it relates to God. Lord, you've been our dwelling place throughout all generations. Before the mountains were born, or you brought forth the whole world from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. In other words, God is before the mountains. He's throughout all generations. God has eternally existed and is the source of time and life. Then the next seven verses, Moses reflects on our experience with time. He says, from dust we've come and we will return to dust. So immediately there's this contrast between God's experience of time and our experience of time. Moses compares our lives to new grass, which springs up in the morning and by evening is all worn out, is exhausted, is wilted, is laying down. And not only are our lives brief, 70, 80 years, if we have the strength, he writes, but our lives are hard also. They're difficult. He says, our best years are but trouble and sorrow, for they quickly pass and we fly away. And we finish our lives, Moses says, not with like shout of triumph, but with a moan. And so the difference between Moses' meditation on God's experience with time and our experience of time is really summed up famously in verse 4, where he writes, 1,000 years in your sight is like a day that has just gone by. The day's already been over. Or like a watch in the night. In other words, what we experience is 1,000 years. I mean, it's poetic, but think about that. Think of human history, all of human history back to like 1023, 1,000 years. God sees as a day, or even less than a day, as a watch in the night, which is 3 hours. So Moses is reflecting on this nearly unimaginable difference between the way the eternal God sees or experiences time and the way finite people like you and me see or experience time. God is the creator of time. He exists outside of time. Time was his idea. He made it. He stands above it. It's as if all of history is this timeline, and God is he's above it, around it. He holds the whole thing in his hands, and he's entirely present to the whole thing at the same time. Right? So we experience huge chunks of time, like 50 years, sounds like a long time, but it's like a nothing. It's like this blink, it's like the little sliver of time in God's experience, because God is outside of time. God is unlimited by time. We are super limited by time. I'm always saying, I just need more time. God never says that. He never says, I just need more time. He has all the time he needs. He has enough time. We, in contrast, we're fiercely limited by time. We exist in time. We are super limited by time. And the sobering reality is that we don't have much of it. Right? Even at the start of a new year, there's 365 brand new days ahead of us. Moses would say it's not a lot of time. Right? And this realization of the brevity of time, the shortness of life, it leads Moses to pray. He prays several prayers. I want to highlight three. The first is, teach us. In verse 12, he says, teach us, he prays, teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Teach us to number our days. What does that mean, number our days? One translation says, puts it like this, teach us to comprehend how few our days are, so that our hearts may be filled with wisdom. Another translation has it like this, teach us to realize the brevity of life so that we may grow in wisdom. Our older kids were home from college for a few days over Christmas, and I was just keenly aware of the shortness of time, the limited nature of time. And it was short, and it was getting increasingly short as the days would go by, and then more and more friends, you know, would call, and they'd want to go do stuff with their friends. And so that awareness of the brevity of time pushed me to want to take full advantage of every minute I had with them. So I would sit with them. I would ask them questions. I wanted to have good memories. I wanted to make, have good conversations, share good meals together. I think we feel this. Generally, I think all of us can identify with this elevated sense of wanting to be very purposeful when we know that time is short. It's the last day of vacation, right? It's the last weekend before the kids move out. It's the last minute of the basketball game. There's 60 seconds left. You got to bring your best game, right? When we're aware that time for us is limited, we make the most of it. We focus on what matters and we do our best. The bottom line is, if I view time as unlimited, I'm less intentional. Right? But if I number our days, if I take a minute to consider the brevity of life, on a very specific level, I think the more specific, the better. I have this many summers before my kids move out. Right? I have this many days this week where I'm not committed in the evening. I can have dinner with my family twice in a week or whatever. Now, that's true whether I'm aware of it or not. The difference comes when I become aware of it, and now I enter into that knowing there's two times I'm going to eat with my kids this week, right? And I bring a whole different level of awareness to it. I'm way more focused on making the most of my time. Moses' prayer is that by realizing the brevity of our lives, we will grow in wisdom. We will gain wisdom. As he reflects on the startling brevity of human life, he prays, teach us to number our days that we may have a heart or gain a heart of wisdom. Most think this is the point of the psalm. This is the main idea of the psalm, that we will gain an accurate assessment of our lifetime, fueled by the clarity of the reality of the brevity of our lifetime. And therefore, we will pursue what matters most. We won't waste time. So that's the first prayer. Teach us to number our days. The second request Moses makes to the Lord is that God will satisfy us. That God will satisfy us. There's this deep awareness, maybe you picked up on it, throughout the psalm of God's anger, God's wrath, which is really God's power throughout the psalm. The words anger and the words wrath suggest heat, seems to be connected with the image of life withering, wilting, fading at the end like withering grass. So in the face of God's overwhelming power, think of like that beat you down kind of heat of the sun like in July, and by the end of the day you're just like, I just need to get in the shade, right? Moses is longing for the compassion of God in the face of the power of God. And so Moses prays, satisfy us in the morning with your unfailing love, that we may sing for joy and be glad all our days. So this second prayer, satisfy us, the sense is that if God's love truly satisfied us, we would be able to flourish where normally we would fade. We would have a joy that is more than momentary joy. We would have a constant joy, a continual joy. All our days we would be glad. He begins to turn towards like a restorative element to this satisfaction that he's praying for. There's a restorative element to this joy. He prays, make us glad for as many days as you have afflicted us. Make us as many years as we have seen trouble. And so this prayer satisfy us, is not just a prayer for the future. It's a prayer about the past. And this is so important. I'm in a season of my life where I'm thinking a lot about the impact of my parenting in the past tense, right? And I know parenting continues. I'm very aware of that. But there's a sense in which the days of my greatest influence in the lives of my children, it's in the past. And that is a sad reality to me because I'd like to be able to do some things better. I wish I could go back and not make some of the mistakes that I made that hurt my kids. I wish I could have several very specific conversations with them when they were young. I have some regrets, and I wish I could have some do-overs. But I can't go back because that's in the past, right? The past is locked to me. And so since I can't go back, friends, I am praying with Moses, satisfy me with your unfailing love. And where the past is a source of pain and disappointment, I'm asking God for restoration. Make us glad for as many years as we have seen trouble. I am so limited, but God is unlimited. God is eternal. And so in my limitedness, I'm asking the unlimited God to restore broken things in my past. Instead of building, the prayer, remember, is the prayer for satisfaction. Instead of building my satisfaction on my own achievements, which isn't very satisfying if you feel like you failed at parts. The invitation is to build my satisfaction on the unfailing love of God. I'm invited by Moses to pray, satisfy us. And this prayer, satisfy us, is connected with this other prayer, teach us. In other words, when I recognize in a healthy way that when I learn the limits of my life, when I learn that I can't do everything, there are things that are beyond my capacity to do, and it's not all up to me. In other words, when I begin to number my days aright, I get smaller, God gets bigger, and I'm able to place my satisfaction in him. And not in me. In other words, friend, it's less about what I didn't do or about what I did. And it's more about what God does. Amen. Consistently. Amen. And to echo verse 16, it's the wonder of God's deeds, not my own, that I hope will be the most obvious to my kids. And then finally, this leads us to Moses' third prayer, which is, may the favor of the Lord our God, may the favor means may the sweetness, may the kindness, may the beauty, may the satisfaction of the Lord our God rest on us, he prays. Establish the work of our hands for us. Yes, establish the work of our hands. I love that Moses repeats that last line. Establish the work of our hands for us. The verb establish means like to ground, to firmly fix, to root. And he's praying, may the work that we put our hands to, may the work that we put our minds to, may the things that we invest our hearts in, may it be effective, may it last. This is Moses' last prayer as he reflects on the limits of his life and the unlimited nature of the goodness and the power of God. As he prays to realize the brevity of his days, teach us to number our days. As he prays to be satisfied with God's unfailing love, satisfy us in the morning. He prayerfully entrusts his work and his whole life to the hands of God. Establish the work of our hands for us. Yes, establish the work of our hands. Let's pray together.